Located in the Badlands of central Alberta is a place known these days as the dinosaur capital of the world. Nestled into a valley carved out by the Red Deer River, Drumheller has a very unique history and landscape. As you drive into the valley, the landscape surrounding you feels almost desert-like and cannot be compared to anywhere else in the province. You can see layers of the past evident in the hills and get a sense that you're driving back into time. The town itself has a very cozy feeling at first, and the downtown core is one that looks a little worn and a little tired. You can feel the years of weather and heat beaten into the older buildings. But there's something else that can be felt in Drumheller, a shroud of darkness and mystery, like there's more than meets the eye. Many people who visit and live in Drumheller will tell you there's almost a fog that comes over you, and that time passes in the most unusual way. In this episode, I will be exploring the town of Drumheller, Alberta, Canada. Though Drumheller is known for the plethora of dinosaur fossils uncovered along the Red Deer River, this episode will be focusing on the darker side of the town. There seems to be a high occurrence of paranormal activity reported in this valley, within the homes, businesses, and secret tunnels that are hidden beneath the original buildings that are part of this historical mining town. Welcome to the Dark Side of Lightwork. I'm Wynn Thornley. In life, I'm a professionally practicing esoteric teacher and channel to the ethers, specializing in demystifying the dark arts and the paranormal. I'm also a supernatural nerd and do a lot of personal research into things that go bump in the night. My fascination with the unknown began when I was a kid, due to having my own misunderstood psychic experiences. I believe my lifelong fascination with the strange and unusual has prepared me for the work I'm called to do now, taking me to places other lightworkers will not go. These experiences have taught me a lot about how many fallacies we are told and actually believe about the world of the unknown. Join me as I share with you what I've learned about the realms of the paranormal, mystics of the past, and places that might make you feel uneasy. I want to lift the veil a little bit and take the Hollywood out of the supernatural and metaphysics. And if you like what you hear, follow along by subscribing and please tell your friends. I wanted to start this episode by giving a big shout out to Carrie Clark and Amber Hoffman. Thank you so much for joining my Patreon community in the month of March. Take a scroll back and see the extra perks you now have access to, including 2 virtual haunted field trips, the latest Patreon exclusive episodes, and some bonus meditations. I appreciate your support in my independent podcast efforts, and this also goes for all loyal Patreons who have joined over the last couple years. Thank you so much. If you're interested in learning more about what goes on over at my Patreon community, I have a link ready for you in my show notes. One other announcement that I have for you today involves something that I've been working on behind the scenes since 2021. I am thrilled to share the launching of the Dark Side of Lightwork Haunted Field Trips, the first of which is taking place July 16th and 17th of 2022. My team and I have put together a fantastic weekend where we will explore one of Alberta's most important historical sites, known as Frank's Slide. This area of the province does have a dark history. This haunted field trip will be an educational experience and will include learning how to work with your psychic senses in real-world circumstances. Think of these field trips as ghost hunting, but from a medium's perspective. In the Frank Slide trip, we have included 3 mini workshops to keep you on your toes all weekend. Included in your ticket is exploring a local cemetery, tour of the Frank Slide Interpretive Center, exploring the slide site, and a goodie bag full of tools for this weekend in the field. Early bird pricing is in effect now until April 4th, and registration will be open until June 16th, 2022. If you're interested in taking a haunted field trip with me and learn about what really goes on at sites like this, I invite you to head to my show notes for a link to my website to register. I will be dropping 2 more field trip experiences in mid-April, so watch my Patreon community, social media, and website for those announcements coming in a few weeks. Now, on to the show. Growing up in central Alberta beginning in the mid to late 80s, you were almost guaranteed a trip to Drumheller, specifically to the world-famous Royal Tyrrell Museum, home to dinosaur fossils and many exhibits that dissect the natural world around us. I recall going to this incredible museum for the first time on a school field trip. As an adult, I have been there countless times, specifically between the years 2011 and 2013. My husband was offered a job within the oil field that was local to Drum. At that time, our home base was in Calgary, and our son was preschool-aged. While my husband began to live full-time in Drumheller, my son and I began living there part-time, driving back and forth from Calgary and Drum weekly. This was a fun town to spend half our week bumming around. My son loved breakfast at Whiff's, which serves up all the morning favorites, including latkes, which I often indulged on. We would usually follow breakfast by wandering around the Royal Tyrell Museum, learning about all the land, air, and sea lizards of the past, and so many natural world things. Then we would take our pup for a stroll around town. I loved the feeling of Drumheller, especially the drive into town. Coming into the Red Deer River Valley at sunrise and sunset were my favorite. On cooler mornings, there was a layer of mist that lingered above the town, and as we drove into the valley, I felt as though we were entering another time. The longer we stayed in Drumheller, the more the energy began to shift for me. What once felt cozy and sheltered began to feel foggy and heavy, like there was a sort of hold on you. Not only did I long to go to Drumheller when I was in Calgary, by the end of our visit, I couldn't wait to get out of town. I really couldn't explain it at the time. I found it interesting that when our family began to make the move to lay down some roots in Drumheller, our course was diverted sharply and we ended up northwest of Calgary to where we reside today. And to be honest, I felt like we dodged a bullet. Don't get me wrong, I love Drumheller. I love how it's unlike any other place in Alberta. The Badlands are like Alberta's little desert, and walking the hoodoos is really a magical experience. But there seems to be a darkness that seeps out of the ground in the valley. One that creeps up on you. It soaks into the foundation of the homes and settles into every nook and cranny. Besides New Orleans, I have not personally visited a place where those I talk to have had so many paranormal experiences. Even those who are skeptical of the paranormal quickly change their tune after living in Drumheller for a spell. So what's going on here? I think I have a good idea, but before I get ahead of myself, let's go back into history. First, I'll unpack how Drumheller came to be a town. Then, I will explore one of the most well-known haunts before I share why I think Drumheller is one of Alberta's paranormal hotspots. The story of Drumheller begins with a man named Thomas Patrick Greentree. Greentree was born on May 26, 1870 in England. In the year 1884, his parents decided to move their family of six to eastern Canada. The Greentree family found roots in Hamilton, Ontario. This is where young Thomas would begin working on local farms. Over time, Greentree began to desire a farm of his own. By the year 1896, Thomas made his way out to the prairies and found himself working for the railway and as a cowboy for other ranchers in the Calgary area. Just prior to 1902, Greentree bought his own cattle and settled into the Red Deer River Valley, this being before the area was even surveyed. By 1907, Greentree filed claim to this land. Greentree is credited for being one of the first men to dig coal in this area of Alberta. His homestead was located not too far from seams of coal, and he used this local coal to heat his growing family's home. Soon after, a man named Jesse Guff would open up his first coal mine around the same site, calling it Newcastle Mine. In around the same time Thomas Patrick Greentree found himself in Calgary, another man made his way to central Alberta with a dream of building a ranch of his own. This man's name was Samuel Drumheller. In the early 1890s, Samuel made the move from Walla, Washington to Alberta with his brother Jerome. After a few years and a turn of the century, the brothers found themselves wandering around the Badlands. From what I was reading online, the pair stumbled upon Greentree's homestead. Finding the doors to be unlocked, they went ahead and let themselves in. As the story goes, the brothers found a bucket of bituminous coal sitting by the stove. This made them curious as to where this stash may have come from, considering this valley was pretty isolated and cut off from the rest of the world, especially at that time. The railway was a few years from being built through this area, and motor vehicles were still being driven by the few. They figured it must be local, so off they went to explore the surrounding area. This must have been in the wintertime, because the article I read by the Drumheller Mail about Samuel Drumheller mentioned that the brothers, quote, went outside to follow the tracks in the snow to the banks of the Red Deer River, only to find a 5-foot coal seam only 15 feet above the valley floor. Unquote. After that point, Samuel and Jerome dropped the idea of ranching like a hot potato and rushed back to Calgary to take out a mineral lease in the area of Greentree's homestead. Since it was well known that the railway was going to be coming through this part of central Alberta, Drumheller wanted to purchase Greentree's land to create a town site, not only to help support the transport of coal, but also to offer a place for workers of the mines to live where they worked. It was on Samuel's third trip back to the valley where he would complete his purchase of Greentree's land. This was in the year 1910. I read that Greentree accepted $2,800 for the sale of his land. That works out to close to $1.5 million Canadian by today's purchasing power. Greentree quit ranching after this point and went into business selling the future townspeople insurance, farm equipment, and real estate. Greentree had quite the impact on the town site. He is credited for applying for and then opening the first school district in the valley. He served on the school board from the onset and was a huge advocate for education for the children of the town. Greentree was also instrumental in establishing the Church of England and housing the first detachment of the Northwest Mounted Police in Drumheller. Back to the year 1911, lots for sale were open to the public, and this would also be the year that would see the establishment of the first post office in the valley, the location being within a local storefront owned by a Mr. Brown John. It was now time to come to a decision as to what this new town site would be called. Greentree and Drumheller decided it was fair to flip a coin over the names Greentree's Crossing or Drumheller. Of course, Samuel won. 1912 would see Drumheller's first railway station, and on May 15, 1913, it was officially incorporated as a village. It wouldn't be long before Drumheller expanded into the size of a town, this taking place on May 15, 1916. The coal boom contributed to rapid growth in the valley. In 15 short years, Drumheller's population would increase by 857%, from 312 in 1916 to 2,987 by 1931. This would boost Drumheller's status from a town to a city. Drumheller's boom would continue until the end of World War II. By the end of World War II, coal began to lose its value, that with the advancements in petroleum refinement and electricity technology. But during the boom, there was a total of 139 coal mines worked within the Drumheller area. This is where we get into a spicy side of the valley. Though dinosaur bones were already being excavated in the area, the coal mines and miners were the main population and economy in the first half of the 20th century. So were the ladies of the night. Drumheller was filled with working men who came from all over the country, and many of them including immigrants. I had read in some of the online sources I came across that each coal mine actually had its own language. The ratio of men to women in the area was definitely out of balance. Enter Mary Roper and Fanny Ramsley. Both women owned the two most popular brothels in Drumheller. Mary's house was on what is now an empty grassland across from the Riverside Packers, and Fanny's business was tucked in the hills behind the Drumheller Cemetery. Locals called these areas of town the Western Front and the Blue Light District. There was close to 6,000 miners in the valley, and women were pretty scarce. The brothels would not only fill with laborers, but you could also find the pillars of the church, local politicians, and mayors. The brothels became almost like community centers. The men would enjoy playing cards, drinking whiskey, eating southern fried chicken, and maybe enjoying some chicken delight afterwards. Chicken delight being a tongue-in-cheek saying some of the young miners used in regards to ordering up a prostitute. Keep in mind, the prostitutes who worked for Franny and Mary were said to be taken very good care of. They had weekly doctor visits and access to whatever they required for comfort. This is important to talk about as I explore what can be found underneath the downtown core of Drumheller. It is well known by locals that there are tunnels under Drumheller's oldest buildings. These tunnels may have been used to transport coal, but they are more well known to be host to underground gambling establishments and brothels. I have heard stories from a local who lives and works in Drumheller today about his experience within these tunnels. To respect his privacy, I will call him Davis. Davis was hired to do some work that took him into the basement and tunnel that originates under the Tellus Building. I was told this tunnel system connects to the Tellus Building, the Tap House Hotel, the Pizza Hut, Shoppers Drug Mart, and the Scotia Bank. Many of these buildings have since sealed off the tunnels, but this particular tunnel was left open. While in the tunnel system, Davis could see that there was an old poker table with cards still on it, and it looked undisturbed from many years before. He also found access to an old men's guest room, assuming this is where the guys would be serviced by the ladies of the night. Then things got spooky. Off in the distance of the tunnel, Davis could see a flickering light, knowing full well he was the only one down there. It was this incident that ended his exploration of the tunnels. There's another story Davis shared, and this one involving a friend of his. To protect his privacy, I will call him Tom. Tom had his own experience of the Drumheller tunnels as a teen. Tom's mom had owned one of the independent businesses while he was in his teens. This business's name was not disclosed to me. Tom had the task of running things up from and down into the basement as his mother was wheelchair bound. In this particular business, there was a sheet of drywall installed with the intention of closing off access to the tunnel system, but this didn't block the feeling of dread Tom would experience while in this part of the basement. At some point, when Tom was around 14, there was a hole punched into the drywall sheet. So, deciding to be brave, Tom went up to the hole in the wall and said, "Hello," into the darkness. What happened next would send a deep chill down Tom's spine. What was told to me is that after Tom said hello, he was greeted by an apparition that put its face right up to the hole in the drywall. I have heard that these two stories are not isolated. Though I could not find much online about the tunnels under Drumheller's downtown core, there are many locals who have had their fair share of strange experiences while in these old tunnels. I would like to arrange an exploration for myself. I will keep you in the loop if this opportunity ever comes to fruition for me. Hearing those stories I shared about Davis and Tom reminds me of what I've talked about in past episodes, and that would be something known as psychic impressions or smudges of events or situations left behind. I am sure with the secrecy of the gambling and brothel action, this might leave an energetic smudge all over those tunnels. And I think about the females involved in prostitution who worked within those tunnels. If there was a traumatic experience for them, or if they were forced to work under duress or intoxicated, this also opens up the opportunity for personal energy drains to leave a mark on these tunnels. Even the routine security of those keeping an eye out for the authorities can leave a pattern of energy behind, and that's what makes me think of Tom's story. It'd be really cool to do an investigation myself and see what comes through my psychic senses. Now that I've explored the beginnings of Drumheller and those tunnels that are pretty hard to research online, let's talk about something that came up a lot in my research efforts, one of the most haunted houses in the Drumheller Valley. The Johnson House came up a ton in my quest for searching all things haunted in Drumheller. There have been paranormal investigations filmed on the premises, past owners who have spoken publicly about their haunted experiences while living in the property, and the current owner has been quoted in newspaper interviews as saying, quote, "It's funny. A lot of people ask me if it's a scary thing, but they never really try to frighten you," unquote. They, in which the current owner speaks about, is thought to be three separate spirits making themselves known within the walls of this 137-year-old home. One of these specters is thought to be the original owner, Mr. Johnson himself. Dr. Robert James Johnson Sr. was originally from Brockton, Iowa. He had moved his dental practice to Central Alberta in the late 1800s, custom building his home in 1885 on 3rd Avenue East in what would later become Drumheller. Dr. Johnson was not only a working professional of the community, he was also a family man. He had a wife, a son, and a daughter, and it seemed as though he was very close with his family. He was also well respected in his community, not only as a doctor of dentistry, but he also served on the Board of Trade, was a member of the Rotary Club, and the local Masonic Lodge. There are many small towns in Alberta that are host to their own local Freemasons Lodge, Drumheller being the location of the Grand Lodge of Alberta. From what I understand, the current owner of the Johnson House is also a Masonic member. With little to research past the basic information about Dr. Johnson, we come to the year of his passing. The year was 1935. As the story goes, Dr. Johnson was in his garage preparing for a hunting trip. He was later found dead beside his shotgun. According to the reports of the local police who investigated the scene, somehow Dr. Johnson's shotgun unintentionally went off while he was packing, killing him in the process. Whether this is true or not, many others believe Dr. Johnson died under mysterious circumstances. Dr. Johnson's death was felt deeply within the community, and it is reported that hundreds of town folk attended his funeral. The family was struck by another great loss only 3 years after Johnson Sr.'s passing. His daughter Marjorie developed a blood disease which ultimately took her life. She had since moved away from her childhood home by the time of her passing. She was buried next to her father in the local cemetery. Owners of the Johnson House have talked about this being the most haunted house in the Dinosaur Valley. There are multiple stories of footsteps going up and down the stairs, especially when someone is home alone. Lights will flicker on and off in the evenings, and you never really feel like you're alone. There's also cases of items just going missing, only to show up later in the spot you're originally looking for them. There's also supposedly a clear EVP captured by a paranormal investigation team floating around. An EVP is what is known as electronic voice phenomena. This involves using an EVP recorder to hopefully capture the voice imprint of a spirit. This piece of equipment is considered one of the most important tools for paranormal investigators. Apparently, the EVP caught in the Johnson house said, quote,
"Sit down,"
unquote. It is believed that the ghost of Dr. Johnson is still wandering the home, as well as his daughter Marjorie. She is believed to have been seen in the house, specifically in an upstairs bedroom kneeling before a window in prayer pose. But there is also accounts of another female energy within the home. I didn't find too much information on this ghostly presence. All I found is that this spirit makes theirself lesser known than that of Dr. Johnson and his daughter. The current owner, named Justin Bolin, offers his own paranormal investigations of his home on Fridays and Saturday nights. He has his own set of equipment and hosts tour in small groups with special rates for parties four and up. There are a few articles online that can be found of Bolin's interviews. He has basically said he's not bothered by the presence of Dr. Johnson, quite the opposite actually. Bolin honors the original owner of his home by hanging an image of Dr. Johnson over his mantle. I will make sure to leave some links in my show notes for you to read a little bit deeper into Bolin's offerings and story. This is where I'm going to express my thoughts about the Johnson house, and I'm sure I will not be making any new friends in the ghost hunting community. I have a hard time believing that this home is haunted by Johnson Sr. and his daughter, and this is for a few reasons. And please note, I have not done a personal investigation and diagnostics on this site, but I have dealt with many upon many quoted haunted homes that have exhibited similar paranormal expressions, if you will. This is an area that I specialize in. And to be clear, I'm not a ghost hunter or paranormal investigator. What those professionals do on site is quite different than what I do. Paranormal investigators go into a situation with the intention to disprove any paranormal activity, but they hold hope in finding something they cannot explain. This involves using a lot of electronics and fancy devices to rule out any explainable reasons for what the people are experiencing. For example, EMF readers are used quite often. EMF readers pick up on electromagnetic frequencies. These are very real, and they come from things like electric panels, TV, cell phones, basically anything running on some type of electricity. When there is a concentration of this energy in one area, it can be felt by people without a doubt. EMFs can make a space feel creepy, can give you anxiety, and it can even make the hairs on your arms rise. This is why people find themselves spooked out in a basement. This is where your home's electrical panel is usually located, and the EMFs thrown from this panel can build up in the space, especially if some of the wiring is a touch off. Makes sense, right? I also found in my studying of ghost hunting in general that many paranormal investigators consider working with a medium only a quarter of the work. Mediums are taught to look for things energetically that those meters and boopers cannot. In my extensive training, I have learned to pick up on several different areas of importance. These areas include those being emitted by the earth, the people involved, and the ethers. 9 times out of 10, the space or land I'm diagnosing has issues coming from the harmonization between the people and the naturally occurring earth energies. Places like Drumheller tend to have a concentration of these. It is very rare in my work to encounter a legit earthbound spirit within a property, and just as rare to find something like a demonic force. Something that I know as intelligent hauntings. Non-intelligent hauntings are those situations of conflicting earth energies that are interfering with the living, or the essence of a memory left behind, like a psychic impression or a personal energy drain. The anatomy of the soul doesn't really work in a way where the soul is left to wander a house they died in. And in the case of Marjorie, she didn't even die in the house, so why would her spirit remain? In the case of Dr. Johnson, he inhabited that home for 50 years. 50 years of walking up and down those stairs, 50 years of turning his lights on and off, 50 years to leave his patterns of his living essence behind. But I want to remind you, there certainly are cases of trapped souls. It does happen, just not as often as we are led to believe. Hollywood and TV producers do a really good job twisting reality. And you would be surprised how many paranormal investigators have little to no knowledge about metaphysics and naturally occurring fields of our planet. That being said, there are also many who do expand past the logic and science of what ghost hunting has become. I dislike attempting to solve a mystery without even stepping foot in the Johnson home, but I would confidently wager a bet that what's going on there is more likely a non-intelligent haunting. My best guess from the information I've gathered in my research is a mix of psychic impressions, geopathic stressors, and telluric fields, and honestly, all of which could be neutralized or cleared up if so desired. There's a reason this home remains, quote, haunted, and that is the desire of the owner. The more we talk about certain ghost stories, the more power we give the energy, even non-intelligent hauntings. If you recall listening to my episode on the Philip experiment, you will recall that with enough intention and belief, groups of people can actually create a ghost. Take a listen back to that episode, and you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. Like I say, I might not make friends within the paranormal community with this professional opinion, but I do the work I do to bring light to the truth of the matter, and most often, it's not what we want it to be. The Johnson House is not the only home to have stories of strange things going on in the valley. There was a forum I read where someone shared their stories of living in what they thought was a haunted home, and I have personally spoken to more than a few people in Drumheller who have had some type of paranormal experience within their space. The research I did on Drumheller led to a lot of dead ends, to be honest. I could see lots of the older buildings had some story attached, but nothing I could verify online except for brief speculations of ghostly encounters or people wanting to know more from the community forum. The Waldorf Hotel, Cactus Jack's, the Navy League building, and the cemetery did make my research list, but nothing was really found except for several different links that led me to ticket sales for an audio walking tour you can join, which is really a neat marketing idea, actually. How it works is that you purchase your ticket, arrive in Drumheller at your chosen date and time. There is a specific starting location. From there, you walk from site to site being led by your smartphone. Each location you stop at includes some information that comes through your phone. And I think I'll join this tour at some point, but only when the weather gets nicer in this part of Canada. I'm curious to learn what this tour will tell me about the ghosts of Drumheller and the origins of some of these buildings, which I couldn't really find online. You can even join a guided ghost walk tour with a local company. They are hosted every Friday and Saturday and are quite affordable. I'm sure they share information that, again, I couldn't find online, and it sounds like the fella that leads the tour has done so for many years. It sounds like a pretty fun time and also something I might join one day. Though I have a very different perspective on ghosts and hauntings these days, I still like to see what these tours are telling people. And they're fun, so why not? Do I believe Drumheller is a paranormal hotspot? I sure do, but not for the reasons you might assume. Drumheller is a valley that is rich with minerals, fossils, and underground water sources, all of which are energetically charged. The Red Deer River Valley was once a shallow sea, and over time, the water levels decreased to what is left today. With the erosion from wind, water, and frost, the naturally formed hoodoos make this area iconic. It can appear to be spooky, but is completely natural in origin. I also feel as though there's potentially a ley line crossing point in around this area. The energy is powerful in the valley, don't get me wrong. A natural vortex mixed with the potential of concentrated telluric fields due to mining activity and groundwater can really amp up an area. In my exploration of Lepp Castle, I covered the idea of ley lines. You might recall me sharing that ley line crossing points create vortex energy, and these areas often attract important buildings like castles and prisons. Drumheller has attracted its own incarceration site. The Drumheller Institution is a federally run prison that accommodates medium security inmates. It was opened in 1967 and is rated at a capacity of 598 inmates. So this adds to my idea of Drumheller being part of an important ley line crossing site, and I suspect that the vortex created could be downloading in nature. I'm also suspicious of geopathic stress. Geopathic stress is when the natural energy of an area becomes distorted. This can occur naturally or through human intervention. Human activities like construction, mining, and moving huge amounts of earth for research and infrastructure are also examples of how geopathic stress can occur. I wonder, did anyone commune with the earth and ask for balance as they mined coal on a massive scale? Did anyone ask the valley if the town of Drumheller would flourish long term? Was there any conversations had with local indigenous tribes about this land and what information they could offer about whether or not a healthy community could thrive here? My guess is no. I have come across many homes and neighborhoods in Alberta that did not ask to be built. And each home where I had to neutralize geopathic stress came with the same complaints. Headaches, broken sleep patterns, poor energy levels, unexplained tiredness, and sometimes even increased levels of impatience or anger that were not present before living in this home. These are real symptoms that have been found in studies that were directly connected to geopathic stress. Once these homes were neutralized, the health complaints also disappear. Drumheller, though beautiful and filled with a kind community, has seen its own struggles after closing most of the mining activity in the area, this occurring after World War II, when coal lost its value. The city also lost a large part of their population and economy. Today, Drumheller is home to a little more than 8,000 people, this after amalgamating several of the surrounding hamlets. After this process was completed in the 90s, Drumheller downgraded its status from a city to a town. There is oil and gas as an industry and a large tourism aspect to this Alberta town these days. The Royal Tyrrell Museum, camping and golf courses attracting over 375,000 visitors to the valley each year. But with all that tourism, it makes me wonder why the downtown core looks and feels so tired. Many buildings are left with empty storefronts. The spring, summer, and fall host a bustling town, but the winters are long and quiet. There seems to be a boom and bust energy that defines Drumheller's economy. This further demonstrates my suspicion of ley line crossing, geopathic stress, and telluric field activity, which can all create what seems like heightened paranormal activity, nagging health concerns, and shifts in the levels of abundance. Each of these earth energies can cause feelings of unease, senses of being watched, and with the right inhabitants in a home, it can express itself as poltergeist activity. To close this episode down, I wanted to share my thoughts on investigations in the paranormal. I believe there's much more study that needs to be done within the realms of parapsychology, paranormal activity, anatomy of the soul, and the natural occurring planetary magnetic, electric, and hydroenergetic fields, and how they're all related. Ghost hunters, psychic mediums, parapsychologists, earth energy diagnostics, and others in the field of the strange each hold a piece of the puzzle, though very few seem to blend more than one area of these studies together. I have personally made the effort to dive into the deep end of the pool and expand my knowledge on many areas of the paranormal, becoming an expert, but with so much more to learn. Our ancient ancestors knew about these things on a spiritual level and thrived when they consciously created harmony with their environment. This is something that seems to have been lost within modern living. Whether we can blame it on settler mentality, disconnection with nature, or the drive to advance technology, I really don't know. I look forward to a time when science and technology intertwines with metaphysics and spirituality on a deeper level, instead of being isolated as either analytical studies or explorations into the woo-woo. Only then will we become more enlightened about the true existence of our paranormal world, and how normal it all really is. Thank you so much for popping by and spending time with me today. I really appreciate you being here. I'm excited to see an increase in loyal listeners, and I would love to hear your feedback. I invite you to leave a message at my Anchor FM page and let me know how you like it. You can also share your personal experiences with a show topic or even share a show idea. I listen to each message and may include your idea in a future episode. Since I'm an independent podcast host and producer, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, a follow on Spotify, or a review on where you're listening to me right now would really help others find my show. Also, a quick share would do the same. I thank you in advance. Outside of my podcast platforms, you can find me on social media by searching for The Dark Side of Lightwork with Wynn Thornley. If you like bonus content, I invite you to check out my exclusive Patreon community. Your contribution helps with the growth and expansion of The Dark Side of Lightwork. I have lots of exclusive content available for my loyal Patreons that isn't available anywhere else. Behind-the-scenes research content, meditations, bonus episodes, and videos. Any support is welcome, and I feel grateful for all the support I've already received. Thank you so much. I'm also expanding the conversation on the dark arts, paranormal, and episode topics over on the Wisdom app. You can find me there going live throughout the month. Wisdom is a blend of live radio and podcasting, as all live conversations become archived so you can listen in later. Wisdom also offers the option to chat with me live, so I invite you to be my guest and join the conversation. In my next episode, I'm going to share what I've learned about Marie Laveau, New Orleans' renowned voodoo queen. Creating mystery and magic during the 1800s, Marie Laveau inspires multiple facets of our spiritual culture even today, from those studying to become modern voodoo practitioners to Hollywood storytellers. Thank you once again for listening until the end. I look forward to dropping the next episode soon. So until then, take good care.